Welcome to Dad's on the Air for Monday, May the 29th, 2007. It's a beautiful, glorious day here in Sydney. The weatherman forgot that it's winter. Maybe the global warming types have got it right. We've got a very interesting show coming up here today. We've got Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein. He's the author of a new book, Parental Alienation Syndrome. Should be a fascinating interview. Dad's on the Air is going through a golden era at the moment. We're doing some of the best shows we've ever done. If you missed last week, Aaron Pitsey's interview, an absolutely fascinating interview that's been getting coverage around the country, a very controversial and fascinating interview. She was the woman that founded the first women's refuge in the world and now regrets the way that they have been misused for propaganda purposes against men. It's a fascinating interview, and today's interview will be as equally interesting. Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein is one of the world's leading experts on parental alienation, and a fascinating interview indeed. Next week, and don't miss next week, we've got Amy J. Baker from the US. She's one of the world's foremost commentators on the consequences of divorce. That too will be a fascinating interview. I hand it over to the very capable Dota team.
Thanks, John. You enjoy the wonderful, the last warm day of the year, probably.
It's absolutely beautiful. And I'd like to welcome, just before we go, all those people who are joining us from around the world via live streaming on the 2GLF website. Technology these days makes it very easy for anyone anywhere in the world to listen to us, and I'd like to wish them a very warm welcome as well.
Fantastic, John. You enjoy the day, and we'll look forward to having you in the studio with us next week.
Thank you, Craig.
It'll be a full team next week with Purdy joining us again, so it'll be good, John. You go back to the Bahamas, mate, in the meantime.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, John.
See you, mate. Well, let's do a little wrap-up of the week's events.
news
for in terms of news that affects men and fathers, and then in a 5 or so minutes we'll get on with the interview with Dr. Lowenstein. There's an interesting story came out last week. A Queensland University of Technology researcher, Nicole Morrell, she's from the Faculty of Education. She's actually looking for Australian parents, especially dads, to take part in a nationwide study investigating the factors that can influence and strengthen father-child relationships. So that sounds like a really positive study. Often we get from the academics at our universities, often the studies they do around men and masculinity appear to be of a negative bent, but this looks to be a really positive one. So if any of the listeners are dads and they want to take part in this study, I'll give an email address they can contact and take part in this research. I'll talk a little bit more about what she's researching. The study will involve surveying parents of children in preschool about their parenting role. The researcher says this study has a number of implications, the most important being to better understand father involvement in childcare. She says traditionally father involvement in childcare has been looked at as a negotiation between the mother and father, with the child seen as passive or silent recipient of care. But what she wants to look at is the ways that children's behaviours of asking dads to help them in their care, how that influences father's involvement with their kids. She says she's done an earlier study, which was part of her honours degree, which highlighted the importance of child-initiated care to the father-child relationship. So it's really interesting. She's looking at the way that the kids get dads more involved, or how the kids actually initiate involvement from their dads.
Well, it's a new era, isn't it? We're in a new century, and it's a new era with father-child relationships. It's expected by the courts that fathers, well, it's certainly their advantage if fathers have taken a greater interest in their children pre-separation. So it's important that we do these studies.
It's accepted by, I think, across the board by society that dads and mums will be equally involved with their kids. We've sort of moved past that old male breadwinner off, you know, earning the money and mum's looking after the kids. That's a thing of last century now. Now that dads are actively involved, it's great to see researchers looking at the way that the father-child relationship develops. So if any of the listeners would like to take part in this study, The study's been conducted via a questionnaire, which will be sent to parents with a reply paid envelope. So, you know, you don't have to come in for an interview or anything like that. You just fill out the questionnaire and send it back. So if you'd like to take part in the survey, you can email Nicole Morel at n.morel, that's M-O-R-E-L, at student.qut.edu.au. Now, we'll put that link up on our website as well. All right, so...
And what about, just Greg, before you go, what about separated parents? Are they also invited to join in with that? Because so often dads want to do something and they don't know where to go or know how to get involved. Are they asked to join in and get their views on that as well? Or?
I think so. There's nothing here indicating that it's only studying intact families. So I think that separated dads absolutely would be just as relevant, and she'd be just as interested in surveying them, because of course unless they're some of the few dads, the unlucky dads who don't have any contact with their kids. If they've got contact with their kids, then she'll be wanting to look at that, to how that works.
So, there you go, Dad. So if you want to do something positive about the issue involving your kids and yourself, there's the address again.
There it is. We'll put it up on the website as well.
So, okay.
Another article came out. This is a story from our friends across the Tasman in New Zealand. It came out titled "Male-Female Gap Bad for Society." Now, New Zealand now has one of the largest gaps in the world between male and female achievers, with men coming out the losers, according to Massey University's Pro Vice Chancellor in Education, James Chapman. He says that the disparity is now so great that New Zealand rates with quite poor and impoverished countries that, in spite of male dominance in their societies, show little in terms of male educational achievements. Now, the professor's remarks followed a graduation ceremony at the Massey College, in which only 15, get this, 15 of the 158 graduates were men.
Wow.
How's that?
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah. He says right there, it was so visible as they crossed the stage, as woman after woman passed by to collect degrees. He says this is a real problem, a hidden problem in trends in New Zealand education that's going to have a major impact downstream. He says there's an absence of research into why this was happening. Now, this isn't surprising because universities seem to be so feminist dominated.
Everywhere.
Yeah, no one's allowed to research things that influence men, especially why men may be doing worse in education. So he says, in the absence of research, there's a lot of speculation at why this is happening. He said there's probably many factors. One of them may be the gradual feminisation of education in New Zealand in terms of policies as well as the teacher gender. And the interesting thing, he says, is in the long term, this is not healthy for boys, but it's also not healthy for girls. Neither boys and girls often have strong male role models in their lives now. Some do not have one at home. And if they don't have a male role model at school either, with all the teachers being women, it's a double whammy for kids, boys and girls. So very interesting.
Interesting, yes. And, of course, just a few moments' time, we'll be speaking to Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein, one of the world's leading experts on parental alienation syndrome. And just to lead that in, we'll be playing the song called Parental Alienation, which if you listen carefully to the words, it basically explains what it's all about. Here we go.
Devastation through manipulation and intimidation is practiced by a pharaoh through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. No more expectation of pharaoh's visitation. Nothing is now positive, only denigration. All attempted contact created complication. Memories are erased with determined application. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. We don't see it, children, despite our protestation. The court will not act to help our situation. Dare to speak out, you invite recrimination, which destroys your reputation by nasty imputation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. Must be exposed, cause a revelation. And this is child abuse, a cruel abomination. The courts must stand up to save their reputation. Eliminate this practice of parental alienation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it as they're kept in isolation. Parental alienation, it causes devastation through manipulation and intimidation. It's practiced by a parent through indoctrination. The children do not know it.
One of the most distressing discoveries for separated parents is to see their much loved children turn against them and then systematically eliminated from their lives. The power to influence such events has been bestowed on the custodial parent by a hideously inadequate family law system which awards custody to one parent, 90% of whom are mothers, and by so doing abandons the children into the care of what often turns out to be the most dysfunctional of their parents. Under the current legal system, a custodial parent is effectively given total control over the children, and because their parents in many cases are highly motivated to inflict retribution on the other parent, they set out to eliminate the non-custodial parent out of the children's lives. This is commonly referred to as parental alienation syndrome, or PAS. On the line, we have one of the world's leading experts on parental alienation syndrome, Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein from the UK. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning to you.
Welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's a pleasure, and I hope I can contribute something to this, the solution to this problem, not merely reiterate the problem that exists.
Absolutely, yes. It's a problem that's been going on for many years, and hopefully this is part of the solution. Doctor, can I start by asking you to briefly explain what the term parental alienation syndrome actually means?
Parental alienation syndrome, it's been well established, has unfortunately not been accepted as existing, although it does exist, by the British Psychological Society or the American Psychological Society. Consists of a number of symptoms or traits which indicate that one of the parents, usually the custodial parent, is trying very hard as a result of implacable hostility between the former partners to turn the children or child against a non-custodial parent because of the hostility felt towards that parent. And there are a number of things that happen whereby the child eventually so identifies with the custodial parent, that parent who has the child in residence, that the child believes everything that is said about the absent parent. The absent parent being viewed as being evil, wicked, cruel, etc., and that there are no positive sides to that parent. Everything is negative. And then this is despite the fact that the child has, in the past, enjoyed a close, warm, and loving relationship with the now absent parent. And this is the success of the parental alienation process, which has done so much harm to children primarily, but equally to the parent who has been, if you like, shoved out of the family, out of the child's life. And you will frequently hear a child say who's been alienated in this way, I don't need my father or I don't need my mother. I have in fact found, contrary to what you have just said, that there are many more mothers who have been alienated against their children by the father, about a third rather than just 10%. I've also found, of course, that grandparents who are on the side of the alienated parent are often also alienated. So the child not only loses his mother or father as a result of this implacable hostility, but also loses the extended family, the grandmother and the grandfather and all the other relations. You may or may not know that in about a week ago, my book was published in Britain entitled Parental Alienation, How to Understand and Address Parental Alienation Resulting from Acrimonious Divorce or Separation. This was published by Russell House Publishing, a publishing firm in Dorset in the south of England. And this book tries to present ways of how ways can be found to help parents and, most of all, the child who has been alienated against a particular parent. It presents also arguments to the judiciary being, of course, the important factor in who gets custody of children. And it should never be that parent who is, if you like, implacable, showing implacable hostility towards the former partner. It should not be that parent who has, in fact, custody of that child, whether it's the mother or the father.
The judiciary has a lot to answer for. From my observations, it would appear that the PAS has many commonalities with a number of other conditions, such as the Stockholm syndrome, the battered wife syndrome. But also it seems to occur in cultic groups, jails. You yourself have made the comparisons of PAS to the Stockholm syndrome. Why is this so?
In fact, one of the chapters in my book deals specifically with the Stockholm syndrome and its similarity to parental alienation. Here's a situation where an individual has been in a situation where a bank has been robbed and the bank contains hostages. The hostage normally would be frightened of the person, in fact, holding them to ransom. But what happens very frequently, that individual will identify and develop a liking for the person who has, in fact, committed the crime. And this is very similar to the situation of a parental alienation, where the child will identify with the parent who is doing the harming, who is, in fact, if you like, the villain of the piece. And the villain of the piece is the winner very often in parental alienation situations, not the good guy who is the good villain. Now, I believe very strongly in a very basic principle. I want to make this very clear to you and your audience who may be listening, that I believe that both parents have a right and responsibility to care and be involved with the child. There are exceptions to this. For example, when one of the parents is a physical or sexual abuser of that child, then that's a different situation altogether. But in my experience, this is a very rare occurrence. The parent who has been alienated is rarely, if ever, an abuser of that child. On the contrary, one might say that the alienated parent is the abused parent, in addition to the fact that his or her child has also been abused.
The condition of PAS, it also seems to share a common or root cause, which is where one person or group has been given or have taken total control over another person or group. And that, in the absence of checks and balances and through isolation, it is a human survival condition to become psychologically entwined with the abuser. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely right. You put your finger right on the important issue. The child is a victim. The child has been emotionally abused by the fact that the only parent present and influencing that child is the custodial parent. And that is where the abuse occurs, because the child has no power. That child is totally in the power of the custodial parent, who victimizes the child further by the fact that they alienate the once loving parent, as you say, usually the father, against that child. And until the child believes, because he has no other source of information, what the parent says is true, that the father or mother in many cases is an evil, horrible person who does not deserve, or the child does not wish to have any contact with that particular parent. And this is where the tragedy occurs. And I would like to go just a little bit further with this. It isn't only the child is abused in childhood. As the child grows up, this does not change. The child doesn't automatically then decide to think for him or herself and say, I want to see the absent parent. I want to see my father, whom I haven't seen for years, just to see what he's like, or my mother, whom I haven't seen for many years. Unfortunately, very few children grow up and eventually want to see or have contact with that parent who has been absent for many years. Now, this is not the only tragedy in the matter. In addition to this, it will be pointed out by another person, Amy Baker, who has written a book about the long-term effects of parental alienation. That child, as it grows up, may well eventually become an abuser of their own children and will practice the implacable hostility that has already been mentioned, and will continue this ad infinitum, so that the child who has been abused and a victim becomes himself an abuser of their children when they become adults.
Yes, we hope to have Dr. Baker on the program next week, actually. So.
Well, I just reviewed her excellent book, and I advise anyone who's interested in knowing more about the long-term effects of parental alienation to read her book on the long-term effects, which she's published in the United States.
We'll be back with Dr. Lowenstein after this track.
Good night. I am leaving in the morning. Before I see the dawn, come and kiss your sleeping eyes. You deserve the truth, and I'll tell you when you're older. For now, just know I love you, and I apologize. Though it breaks my heart to see you growing from a distance, when I see what you've become, it fills my heart with pride. I brush away your tear and watch you waving from your window, but I can feel the pain go each time I see you smile. I worry how the innocents get caught up in the crossfire. There's no control of changes in their lives. But take the time and listen to the wisdom of your children who haven't learned the need of taking sides. I am leaving in the morning. Before I see the dawn, your sleeping eyes. I'll say this out of love, and I'm making you a promise. I'll be back next weekend, and so till then, good night.
Speaking with Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein, the author of a brand new book, Parental Alienation Syndrome.
The perpetrators of PAS appear to display many of the characteristics which are also common to the behaviour of, say, psychopaths, narcissists, those suffering from various personality disorders. Would you agree with that? Those comparisons?
Absolutely. The psychopath is an individual who sees nothing wrong with his or her behaviour. The psychopath feels no guilt about what he or she is doing, and hence they will in fact do everything they can to turn the child against the absent parent, and they see nothing wrong in it. They are convinced of the fact that that absent parent has nothing to offer that child, and that's where the psychopathic element comes in. No feelings of guilt. If one can get, in fact, when treatment occurs of the situation, I'm often involved in mediation and treating these problems. One of the most important things one can do is to make the child feel eventually a sense of guilt, and also the alienating parent, for what has been happening. The treatment of that absent parent, and I've seen some very cruel and unfortunate scenes where the child has said, I don't want anything to do with this horrible man or this horrible woman in some cases. And this is where the psychopathic element comes in, where the child feels absolutely no guilt. So the child is in fact identified with the psychopathic element of the mother or father who has inculcated this type of thinking, this cult type of thinking, for which there's no evidence that absent parent is in any way other than a loving and caring individual. And what happens, of course, eventually, that absent parent will try as hard as possible through the courts and through any other method that's possible to make contact with their child, with their mail being refused, their Christmas and birthday presents not being delivered to the child, will eventually, unfortunately, have to give up the fight. And that's a sad indication, because that child then has lost an important member of his family.
Many of the children are told that the other parent has actually abandoned them, while in fact the alienator has effectively prevented the non-custodial parent from having any contact with their children. Yeah. Doctor, could you describe typically what sort of effect this has on the target parent and the victim children when dealing with this alienating behaviour?
Well, it's a total injustice, because, of course, the father, in many cases, who decides eventually that he can't make contact, he can't have a good relationship with the child, will, you know, for his own survival or her own survival, opt out of making any further attempts. This is then used by the alienating parent as ammunition, as evidence. You see, your father, your mother doesn't really care for you. She never calls you. They never send you any presents. They never help to buy you clothes. And of course, one of the complaints among custodial parents is often that the absent parent does nothing to help, either financially or in any other way, to help that child. The child then believes, unfortunately, because he has no other source. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what should be done about this type of situation, because at the moment we know what the problem is, and we know the symptoms and results of these problems, but we have not as yet tackled how to deal with the matter. The most important thing is to have that child to have contact with the absent parent, even if that child says, I don't want to see my father, I don't want to see my mother. Now, the judicial system in Britain, and I suspect very much in Australia and elsewhere, has the attitude, if the child says, I don't want to see my mother, I don't want to see my father, there must be a very good reason for this. Well, there is a good reason. It is almost totally because of the alienating process of the custodial parent. But this is not viewed by the courts. The courts and the judges will say the child knows what he or she wants. We have to abide by the child's wishes. And the unfortunately, the expert witnesses involved, the psychologists and psychiatrists, will frequently go along with this without ever investigating the reason, and that is the important thing, the reason why the child is so, has such antipathy for the absent parent. They don't investigate this at all. All they say is the child wants, the child gets what the child wants. It isn't really what the child wants. It is what the alienator wants the child to do.
Exactly, and that brings me to another question. The issue of what is called hired gun psychologist who will write reports for a price which support the views of the alienating parent against the victim parent, and by so doing, knowingly are complicit in the alienation process. What are your views on these abhorrent practices?
I think it is very sad that individuals who are professionals will go to the lengths of agreeing with a lie, an obvious lie, in order to feather their own nest and their own financial acumen. I think it's an injustice which has been perpetuated in this country. And, of course, people like myself are frequently eliminated from providing evidence in the court of the kind that I've just mentioned, because they know that I am independent. I believe both parents have a right and responsibility to have contact with their child, and I'll do anything I can to make certain that child will eventually make contact, initially perhaps supervised, then eventually unsupervised, until that child really gets to know firsthand what the absent parent is like, and not rely totally on the brainwashing that child is receiving constantly from the alienating parent. I've had children come to me who come with the view that they want nothing to do with their father or mother in some cases. And after a number of sessions with the father or mother being present with the child, eventually that relationship is resumed, and a warmth developed once again between that child and that now absent parent. Of course, that can be easily destroyed once the child returns to the alienator. Now, here we have a situation where the courts have to abide by what the expert witnesses say, which is the psychologist or psychiatrist, where they say this parent is continuing to alienate that child against that absent parent, and that cannot be allowed to continue. And this is where the crux comes in. What does the court do? Virtually nothing in most cases. What it should do, however, is to remove that child from the pathological influences that that child is undergoing over a number of months, years, which is harming that child in the long term, as already mentioned, and should try to remove that child and to develop, get the child to develop a relationship with the absent parent, and in the worst situation, remove that child totally from the alienating parent and place him or her with the parent who has been deprived of that child's company.
Let's look a bit more at the solutions to this problem. Let's take a hypothetical case that a family's going through a separation or divorce, and they come before the family court. At the moment, there seems to be a culture in the family court that says if there is obvious hostility and disagreements and antagonism between the two parents, this is a reason why we should not go for shared parenting, not go for shared care, but we should give the child to one or other of the parents. Now, would you argue that perhaps the greater the conflict, there's actually a greater need for both parents to be involved to avoid this sort of
absolutely.
PAS?
Absolutely. I totally agree with what you've just said. In the case of that implacable hostility which exists and continues between the parents, that is all the more a reason for getting that child to have contact with the other parent. Now, the main problems that occur is when in the handover situations very often, where the non-custodial parent comes to pick up the child or see the child, and then there's a lot of acrimony in the presence of the child when that child's being picked up. Well, here there's certainly answers to that particular problem by having intermediary pick up that child and pass him on to the other parents, so that there's no contact with the other with the alienating parent. It's important just because there's acrimony or implacable hostility between the parents, that is no reason why the child could not have contact with both parents. And of course, treatment should continue all along. Both parents must be made aware by a clinical or educational, other psychologists or psychiatrists, that the harm they're doing to these children by speaking badly about the other parent is not doing them in the long term any good either. Because sometimes children turn around and say to their alienating parent, "You have told me a lot of lies about my father or my mother. I'm now going to find out myself what that father or mother is really like." Unfortunately, that doesn't happen often enough, as I've already mentioned, but it could happen, and then the child eventually, if you like, turns its back on the alienator who has been for years trying to make the other parent look in the worst possible way.
Doctor, the independent thinker phenomenon, now this is a technique is often used by the alienators. What can you tell us about that?
Well, this essentially is when the child makes a decision that he or she doesn't want any contact with the other parent. And this is viewed very much by the courts as evidence there must be something wrong about the absent parent for the child to have developed this independent, well, it's not independent at all, as I've already mentioned. It's not independent thinking. It's, in fact, the thinking of the custodial parent. The child has not got any independence. In order to safeguard its own security as an individual, it has to believe in what the custodial parent says, because failing to do so, having lost one parent, they're fearful of losing the other parent as well. And the child is very much involved, therefore, in how the custodial parent thinks about the absent parents and the implacable hostility that has continued for often so many, many years, that the child eventually believes and becomes to think exactly as the custodial parent and no longer sees any good signs in the absent parent, I say very, very often the father.
We'll be back with Dr. Lowenstein from the UK shortly.
Our children are stolen, myself and the seat, by brainwashing parents who charm, lie and cheat. They're soon taught to hate a parent they once loved. Our poor little children, enough is enough. Caught in a trap, they must learn to survive, so they join with their parent who hates, cheats and lies. After a while, they both act the same, the brainwashing parent and a child without shame. A child is not born with hate in their heart. It's taught in a household where parents live apart. The parents they live with use fear and control to brainwash their children, since the court gave them this role. Our children are stolen, myself and the seat, by brainwashing parents who charm, lie and cheat. They're soon taught to hate a parent they once loved. Our poor little children, enough is enough. The child does not know when deception occurs. They're too young to recognize denigration and slurs. To hate the other parent is rewarded with praise. They're not free to think as they're locked in a cage. Surely it's abuse when this behavior persists. Their childhood destroyed by these parental terrorists. Dysfunctional thoughts can make them angry or depressed. inflicted by these parents who are sick and obsessed. Our children are stolen by stealth and deceit, by brainwashing parents who charm, lie and cheat. They're soon taught to hate a parent they once loved. Our poor little children, enough is enough. One day the child will seek out the past, faced with the truth, it will leave them aghast. They will discover how lies changed their life, how helpless they were, and how lucky to survive. To all who take part or do nothing to prevent this abuse of our children who continue to lament the loss of a parent when they are growing up, you will stand condemned as weak and corrupt. Our children are stolen by stealth and deceit, by brainwashing parents who charm, lie and cheat. They're soon taught to hate a parent they once loved. Our poor little children, enough is enough. It's on the air.
We're talking with Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein. He's one of the world's leading commentators on parental alienation and the author of a brand new book, Parental Alienation Syndrome. Welcome back.
Dr. Lowenstein, some of our listeners may be wondering, well, what's the difference between sort of mere bad-mouthing, occasionally saying, you know, a few critical things of one's ex-partner, and this actually being a syndrome, a psychological syndrome? Is there a scale on which you can place this sort of alienation from a mere bad-mouthing to some sort of pathological condition?
There is, but I'd like to turn a minute, just a minute, towards a good parent relationship.
Sure.
And where there is no implacable hostility, or if there is implacable hostility, that both parents consider the child first and foremost in the equation. This is what would happen in that sort of situation. I've always encouraged parents to behave in this way, where I say to both parents, look, when you speak about the other parent, speak in favorable and positive terms, even if deep down perhaps you feel a lot of anger for that parent, for that, the fact that he or she has left you for another person, and so on. Think about what is best for that child. And what is best for the child is for you to say, your father is a good man. He and I didn't get on with each other, and we fall, and we are no longer together. But he loves you just as much as I love you. Now, the same, of course, must be done by the other side. This is when a good parental breakup occurs, where parents consider the child first and foremost in the equation. And that is when parental alienation does not occur, and that where implacable hostility, if and when it existed, does not destroy that child and his or her love for the other parent.
Doctor, most of the target parents find themselves between a rock and a hard place. The more they try to explain to their child what is happening, the more the child appears to support the alienating behaviour perpetrated by the abuser. Is there an answer to this? Can they do anything different?
Well, they can do, unfortunately, very little, because the dice, if you like, are loaded against them. They've been seen as demons by the manner in which they have been brainwashed. There's a need for a third individual to come into the equation, a psychologist or psychiatrist who understands the situation, who can speak to the child and make that child aware, if you like, counteract the alienating process through his own therapeutic approach with that child, and make that child aware by questioning the child's reasons for why he or she dislikes to have contact with the alienated parents. And this is very important. And then when that child eventually, in fact, responds positively and understands what has been done, and this isn't always to happen, then it's a question of returning to the court with a long written report provided by that psychologist indicating what he or she believes ought to happen with that child to perpetuate the positive influence that have occurred through the therapeutic process or the mediation process.
And have you seen many successful examples of this happening, of a psychologist intervening in a positive way?
Not as many as I would like to see, but this has been usually due to the fact that the courts have not worked with the expert. They have not worked with the psychologist who has recommended certain things and has, in fact, worked against the advice provided by an independent and caring and professional psychologist who is not out to feather his own nest, but is trying to do what is best for the child and for both parents in the equation. And that's where things fall down. If the courts do not work with the professional person who has attempted to heal the rift, and this is what I like to emphasize, to heal the situation, then we have very little chance of success. One of the chapters of my book on parental alienation deals specifically with folie hors d'oeuvre, where, again, you know, using different words, the child becomes totally enmeshed with the alienator and becomes, if you like, an echo of that alienator. It becomes exactly the same sort of person, and they identify with that individual who is doing the damage. And again, let's look at it from the pathological point of view, doing the damage because of a sick mind. And many of these people who do the alienated are psychologically disturbed. They are mentally disturbed. They are so full of hatred, they cannot see any value in the alienated parent whatsoever. All they can see is he's a terrible man or he's a terrible woman, and the best thing is that she's out of the picture. Now, I would like to say one more thing. Another ingredient of parental alienation is accusations made by alienating parents of sex abuse, of domestic violence, which is another issue. Now, if there has been sexual abuse, then I've already stated my views on this. Parents who sexually abuse a child should have no direct contact with that child. However, parents where there have been problems of domestic violence between the parents, this to me is not a reason why that parent who it is claimed has committed domestic violence should not have contact with the child. The child, after all, has not been the victim of domestic violence. And remember, domestic violence can be brought about in many different ways. It can be a very provocative situation where two parents can't get on with one another. And, of course, the child sees this and is very, very upset by this. But once the parents are parted company and the domestic violence has ceased, and there is no reason why that parent is no longer in the family should not have contact with the child because of the antagonism or implacable hostility sometimes featured in domestic violence, why that parent, that absent parent, should not have contact with the child. The cause of the problem has not been the child. The cause of the problem has been the acrimony between the two parents.
Doctor, due to the, as you say, the bias in the family courts, which sees around 90% of child custody decisions being in favour of the mothers, it is mostly mothers that are perpetrators of the PAS. Do you agree, however, with the hypothesis that it is gender non-specific and that fathers would do the same thing if they were given unlimited power and control?
Fathers can make as good a parent as mothers, and has been established by considerable evidence. Very often, when one parent dies, the other parent takes over the parenting role. Very often, if the mother dies, the father takes over the parenting role. Fathers can be as equivalent in their care of their children and as loving and as guiding as mothers can be. I don't see any difference. We're always talking about equality of the sexes. Well, if there is such equality, then, of course, the father has much right and as much ability to care for children as mothers have.
In the case of where there is, say, custody is given to the father and he becomes the alienator, is there a difference in the way that a male alienator behaves compared to the female alienator?
No, I think they're very similar. And again, I come across this from time to time in my work. And remember, I receive about half a dozen or more phone calls and emails from parents in this situation where the father, who who may be the alienated parent, then alienates the child against the mother. Now, this is equivalent, this is the same thing. I'm totally opposed to that as much as I am to the custodial parent who alienates a child against the non-custodial parent. None of the parents should do this. This is harmful to the child. And remember, our primary consideration is the short and long-term welfare of the child. And that child will be harmed when the absent parent who has the child for a period of time again alienates or tries to turn the child against the custodial parent. This again is no different from the reverse situation.
We absolutely agree here at Dads on the Air that dads and mums can be equally good and equally bad. Now, we're running out of time, Dr. Lowenstein, so we might get you to wind up with maybe some positive suggestions. What are the main practical solutions that you can see to address this problem, either from a legal perspective or possibly other perspectives? And also, maybe if you'd like to give us a few more details about your book before you go.
Well, the book is self-explanatory. It is partly written by the parents who I've seen, and some parents who have contributed to this book very generously and who are mentioned. There are other parents who have decided that they don't want their names mentioned in the book. But the most important thing that I can think of where improvements can occur is the relationship of the expert, the psychologist or psychiatrist, working with the court, but as an independent assessor of the situation, not falling into line with the court, not falling into line with pressure from the custodial parent, or not falling into line with what the child says, which is a very superficial assessment of the situation. In other words, whatever that independent psychologist finds in the situation, he must present. And always remembering the basic principle in which I personally believe, which is that both parents, all things being equal and right, have a right and responsibility to have a contact and to guide their youngsters in the best possible way in order to have the best possible future.
Doctor, you've got lots of other information on your website. Can you tell our listeners how to get to your website?
I'm happy to do this. My articles on parental alienation, about 40 I believe they are at the present time, can be downloaded. The website is parental-alienation.info. There's also another website which readers may wish to contact, which contains a lot more information on other areas which I've worked, which is Dr. That's Dr. Ludwig Fred Lowenstein.com. That's all in small letters and all together. So if any reader would like to have more information, please contact that. And I'm also would like to say to all your audience, I hope it's a large one, that if they want to talk to me by telephone to discuss any problems or issues that they have, I'm happy to give you my telephone number, which is from Australia, 44238069 2621. I repeat, 44238069 2621.
Doctor, you're a champion. We've run out of time, unfortunately. I must say it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on Dads on the Air this morning. This is actually the first time we've actually presented a program on PAS, and I think a lot of our listeners share our gratitude for passing some of your vast knowledge on PAS to us all. We hope we can do this again sometime and wish you lots of luck with your book.
Thank you very much. All money raised by the book, by the way, is going to a charity to help parents who have great difficulty fighting their cases. I should like to say one more thing about Australia. I've lived in Australia. My first university degree is from the University of Western Australia, and you have in your country at the moment two of my sons, one from Sydney, another one from Melbourne. So I still have associations with Australia.
You had a great start, didn't you, in Australia?
That's right.
Okay, thank you again, Doctor.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All the best with your work.
Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein, one of the world's experts on parental alienation, and he's given you his phone number if anybody would like to ring him up. He sounds a very genuine gentleman who was willing to help all the victims of PAS, and if you feel inclined to ring him up and get some advice, he's the man. Next week, we have Dr. Amy J. Baker. Now, she will follow up on today's program. She has done an empirical investigation into parental alienation syndrome from the perspective of 40 adults who, as children, were turned against one parent by the other. Too little is known about the strategies parents use to effectuate the alienation, and to date, the long-term effects of parental alienation syndrome on the child victims have not been documented. She's just written a book called Adult Children of Parental Alienation Syndrome, Breaking the Ties That Bind. And this is the first actual study that's been done on the long-term effects of parental alienation, and much more has to be done, but she has great credentials, and we'll be speaking to her.
And that'll be a live interview from the US.
From the US, yep. That'll be a live interview, yes. And we will look forward to that. And also, we have some other interesting interviews in the...
Yeah, coming up in the coming weeks, we also have an interview with Adrienne Burgess. She's the author of a book called Fatherhood Reclaimed, and she's the policy and research advisor to Fathers Direct, which is the National Information Centre on Fatherhood in the UK. Fathers Direct do some really great work on behalf of dads in the UK, trying to get fathers involved in all areas of policy making with the British government. So that will be a fantastic interview. Look forward to listening to that in a couple of weeks' time.
So lots happening on Dads on the Air. Well, we thank you all for listening. That's the program for today, and we hope to enjoy your company again next week. So it's goodbye for Dads on the Air. Till next week. With Dads on-